Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. In the early 1990s, Somali refugees settled in the Minneapolis-St. Paul region of Minnesota. About a decade later, another influx settled in Columbus. Ohio State University graduate Stephanie Chambers has compared and contrasted the Somali experience in these cities in her new book entitled Somalis in the Twin Cities and Columbus, Immigrant Incorporation in New Destinations. She is a professor of political science at Trinity College in Hartford, Connecticut, and joins us by phone. Welcome, Stephanie Chambers.
Thank you, Anne. I'm delighted to be with you today.
Broadly summarized, the Twin Cities experience has been more positive than the Columbus experience. When we talk about that, are we just referring to the experiences of the Somalis or of the cities as well? Are we talking kind of holistically or separately here?
Well, there are some holistic differences, I would say, between the political climate, the history of the Twin Cities and Columbus. For example, the Twin Cities has had some very progressive politicians over time that have been very open and receptive to having new refugee communities come into the area. For example, the Hmong resettled in largely St. Paul in the 1970s. But we've also got other examples of, you know, things like the political structure in the Twin Cities, philanthropic groups in the Twin Cities that have been really supportive of new refugee communities, new Americans, I should say. In Columbus, you see a little bit less of that. But I'd like to look at it in a positive way, that there are things that could happen in Columbus that could really improve the situation for groups like Somalis and other new refugee communities. I think there are things that policymakers could do to really make things better.
So there's hope.
There is hope. I think there is hope.
For starters, let's just talk about the numbers for a second. Why are there more than twice as many Somalis in the Twin Cities than in Columbus? Do you have any explanation for that? And does it even matter?
Well, I don't. It does matter. I mean, the estimates are hard to, they're not concrete.
Right.
And that's largely because of problems with census data. There are about 60,000 Somalis in the Twin Cities, and there are between 30 and 45,000 in Columbus. So the difference is there, but it's not enormous. So part of the reason that both of these communities have large populations of Somalis is not only because Somalis were initially settled in some of these areas, but also secondary migration, where, let's say, a Somali friend or family member was in the Twin Cities and said, hey, there are jobs here, the cost of living is lower, or a Somali friend or family member was in Columbus and said, hey, there's an abundance of warehouse jobs and apartment housing, and the cost of living is really low, you should try to come here. So people moved from areas like, let's say, San Diego, where the cost of living was higher, to areas like the Twin Cities and Columbus. So secondary migration has been a big reason that we've seen growth in this community.
You focused mostly on three metrics, you said, political, economic, and social. In this context, what do we mean by political? Do we mean by political as far as the politicization of the Somali community, or we talk about the politics of the city before they even arrived?
Yeah, well, I talk about political incorporation, social incorporation, and economic incorporation.
Okay.
For political incorporation, I look beyond sort of the traditional measures of political inclusion and engagement, like voting, to look at things like how is the electoral structure creating consequences for a community? How much outreach are political parties doing to these communities? What sort of role are these groups playing in an electoral versus a governing coalition? What sort of bureaucratic outreach is going on in the city? How active are unions in recruiting and including groups like Somalis? And what role do community organizations play in the city? So all of these, I call them indicators of incorporation, are measured in terms of political incorporation. And I find significant differences in the Twin Cities and Columbus. The Twin Cities do much better on all of these measures than what we see in Columbus.
In general, and again, I know I'm doing broad brushstrokes, but we have a whole hour. In general, is it because does Minneapolis, St. Paul, do they do a better job at all these things because they're consciously doing a better job? Or is there something sort of intrinsic about the culture there that makes them more functional at this stuff?
Well, I think that there have been conscious efforts to be inclusive. And this goes from union leaders to elected officials to, you know, philanthropic groups. There's been a real interest for decades in acknowledging that diversity is a good thing, that residents want to welcome Somalis to their community, Hmong, whoever it is.
Mm-hmm.
There's been, a strong, concerted effort on the part of policymakers.
And I wonder what they might have learned from the Hmong immigration experience and refugee experience in Minnesota that informed them for the next group coming of Somalis that came in the early 90s.
Yeah, I think that they got a sense of what things people need, people who come in who are coming from humanitarian crises, what it is that they need, especially when they have low levels of English language skills. They had refugee resettlement organizations that had been well established and had been there for a long time. Mm-hmm. In Columbus, they're newer. And so I would say that now they have great experience. The organizations that I met with representatives from and did interviews with, they're terrific in Columbus, but they just don't have the same history as they do in the Twin Cities.
Right. And I'm wondering about the timing of the arrival and how that might impact the whole integration process. That is, in Minnesota, it was in the early 1990s. In Columbus, it was later in the decade when things have gotten messier. Had anything changed at the political cultural level during that interlude that would, affect anything?
The numbers of Somalis started to increase around like 1994 in Columbus, so it wasn't that long after the Twin Cities. I wouldn't say that there's anything significant at the political level that made it more difficult for Somalis in Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
The cultures of the state, as you've been referring to, are a little bit different. And I do a little bit of analysis based on research by Robert Putnam to talk about social incorporation and how receptive communities have been. And
mm-hmm.
and Ohio doesn't do the same job as Minnesota does. But I would say that, again, there's room for improvement. Ohio could follow in the footsteps of the Twin Cities. And especially if we think about, the things that I hope that people will, if people do read my book, I hope that they can take some of the examples and say, maybe Columbus is just one step behind. I mean, maybe we don't have the exact same political, social culture in Ohio as you do in the Twin Cities, which has this, history of progressive politics. But there are places, easy places, where things could change in Columbus.
The name of the book is Somalis in the Twin Cities and Columbus, Immigrant Incorporation in New Destinations. My guest is the author of that book, Stephanie Chambers. She's an Ohio State grad and is now teaching political science in Delaware.
Hartford,
Connecticut. I apologize. If you have a question or comment about this, we are going to have representatives from the Somali community on for the rest of the program. And we'll also be hearing from somebody in Minnesota about their experience there. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You said, Stephanie, that one of Columbus's missed opportunities was recruiting Somalis into law enforcement. The issue of the hijab was a big deal in Columbus. At a certain point, Columbus leaders decided against allowing females to wear the headscarf while on duty. What is it? Where has, besides that particular issue, where there are, it doesn't apply to males, where have they failed? How? Why?
Well, I think that there are a number of areas where there could be change and improvement. One of them is not only the snap-on hijab that the St. Paul Police Department has adopted,
yeah,
where female officers can wear a hijab, it just snaps off. So there's no safety issue with someone grabbing the hijab and
right,
someone being in danger. It's like the snap-on tie, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's one area. Another area is, if we're talking about political incorporation, the role of unions, I think, could play a more important role in Columbus. A lot of Somalis are employed in warehouses. If they were unionized, which they are not, that could lead to some opportunities for leadership within the union, But also, as we see in the Twin Cities, that's created opportunities into the political structure to get political jobs, political appointments. And I think that's a missed opportunity in Columbus. I would also mention things like in the Twin Cities, you have the African Development Center, which is a small business community lender that works with the city of Minneapolis to create small business loans, financial literacy workshops, home buyer workshops, things that Somalis desperately need that are done in a culturally sensitive way. Columbus could use something like that. If we look at the economic situation of Somalis in Columbus, they really struggle. Poverty levels are extremely high. Employment levels are low. Home ownership rates are extremely low. These are all areas that if we think about, you know, sort of the quote-unquote American dream, we want people to have opportunities. And really the Somali community is struggling with that. And I would add that that's even more powerful when we think about the economic resiliency of a city like Columbus. Columbus has done an amazing job responding to economic change and remaining economically viable. Yet we see this community, the Somalis, that have really struggled on the margins. And I think that there are economic opportunities to increase their incorporation. And then I would also mention that although Columbus only has about 30 local foundations, and some of them are doing great work on refugee resettlement and research on new immigrants, there could be more done to target Somalis and other new refugee communities to try to create increased capacity among community organizations, so create funding opportunities that could help some of the great Somali organizations that are in Columbus be a little bit more viable. In the Twin Cities, there are like 120 philanthropic organizations, but many of those organizations, they coordinate with the local government and they create programs that help new immigrants and refugees with either like supporting community organizations or grants that specifically target programs that will help those communities. And it's a pretty amazing thing when you see this sort of web of coordination in the Twin Cities that's absent in Columbus. But again, it could happen. You could have foundations in Columbus that say, hey, we want to coordinate with, you know, the mayor's office to create some sort of a program for small businesses for Somalis, maybe even trying to get them in communities that, you know, that don't have a lot of Somali small businesses to try to better integrate the community and expose people to other Somalis, I mean, to Somalis. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that was really terrific in my field work was that I was able to bring my children along with me. And my son at the time was like 11, and we were in Columbus, and he got to go to the International Women's Day celebration at the state capitol. He got to meet my Somali friends, eat Somali food, be exposed to people who were in leadership positions. And for a kid to see that is really powerful. And I don't think we have enough of that in our communities. So, you know, trying to recruit Somalis to become teachers, to become police officers, to be local elected officials, having them really incorporated in our political, social structure is powerful. And if our children can see that and get to know people who are different from themselves, I think it holds a lot of promise.
We're talking and comparing and contrasting the experiences of integrating Somali refugees into the Columbus community, comparing and contrasting it with what happened in the Twin Cities in Minnesota. If you have a question or comment, want to join the conversation, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. I'm talking right now to Stephanie Chambers. She's the author of a new book. It's entitled Somalis in the Twin Cities and Columbus, Immigrant Incorporation in New Destinations. She's also a professor of political science at Trinity College in Hartford, Connecticut. Coming up, we're going to hear from the representatives of the Somali community in Columbus. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. The best estimate is that Franklin County Somali population numbers about, 30 to 40. 35,000 to 40,000, making it the second largest Somali community in the United States. The largest is in Minneapolis, St. Paul. We're comparing and contrasting those communities today, what works, what doesn't, when it comes to integrating Somalis into society. Still with us is author of the new book entitled Somalis in the Twin Cities and Columbus, Immigrant Incorporation in New Destinations, and professor of political science at Trinity College in Hartford, Connecticut, Stephanie Chambers. Stephanie, thanks again for joining us.
Sure. Glad to be here.
Joining us now is Ohio State University Somali language professor Jibril Mohammed. He is executive director of Somali Can. That's a community-based organization that facilitates the integration of Somali Americans in Central Ohio. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Anne.
Also, New American Initiative Outreach Coordinator for the City of Columbus, Abdi Sofay. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Okay, so are you both refugees? Did you come here as refugees?
We are citizens of the United States now, but we came in as refugees, yes.
Yes, okay. So is Columbus a welcoming city? I guess kind of at an emotional level, I just wanted to get your response to that question.
Indeed, if I answer for that, Columbus is the largest city and the capital city of the great state of Ohio has been a welcoming city. Matter of fact, it has a tradition of being a welcoming city. We have a friendly public policy by the leadership, the city council, the mayor. We have a mayor who just signed an executive order reiterating Columbus's position of being a welcoming city. Matter of fact, and I quote, he said, directly talking to the leaders of New Americans, a very diverse group of leaders, that Columbus is your home. Since the 1990s, Columbus have been working very closely with organizations, community-based organizations, faith-based organizations to promote understanding, to promote diversity within the city of Columbus. And that's what made Columbus a multicultural city. Typically, Columbus was not a gateway city, but that has changed. It became a global city now.
Yeah.
We have about 130 different languages now, Columbus.
Right. What was your experience?
So coming to Columbus was a really great experience. I was able to find a job within the first 30 days that I was here. Life was more affordable than many other major cities in the U.S. There was lots of support from the community in terms of the faith-based community that Somali, the business community is well established. Socially, the Somalis are established. So there were resources available to me that helped facilitate my integration.
So when you hear Stephanie Chambers talk, though, and compare and contrast it with the Twin Cities in Minnesota, what strikes you? What resonates with you, Jibril Mohammed?
So when you look at the integration of Somalis in Columbus, I think economically and socially, although there are some segments of the Somali community that are not doing very well, overall the Somalis are doing great in terms of business ownership, in terms of employment. Actually, I saw a report that stated that Somali participation in the workforce is greater than the average American participation. I think economically Somalis are not doing that bad. Socially, they are doing very well. Politically, though, there is a problem in Columbus when compared to Minneapolis. In Minneapolis, we have an elected city council member who is Somali. We have an elected education board member who is Somali. We have a state representative who is Somali. In Columbus, we have none of those. In Minneapolis, we have lots of appointed Somali individuals on boards and commissions at the local state levels. In Columbus, we do not have many such appointed individuals. I mean, the state house in Ohio does not have a single appointed Somali official whatsoever. In Minneapolis, the governor's office has a number of people. The state house has a number of employees who are Somali, a number of higher policy analysts and policy advisors at the state level. The city council policy aides there are mostly Somali. There are police officers who are Somali over there. In Columbus, actually, the question that you asked earlier on about the police participation by males when they don't face challenges, that I think is not through Somali males face challenges. I have had experiences with two young men who applied to the academy who have been disqualified for reasons that were not understood by the participants. And when they left Columbus and went to Minneapolis, they became police officers there. So I think there are some structural issues that Somalis face from participation in the public sector in terms of employment, in terms of public office holding, all of those areas.
Abdi, Sofe, what, I mean, you've heard these concerns before.
I did. And you got to understand, though, the community dynamics, demographics of both cities is completely different. Columbus is twice the size of Minneapolis. Minneapolis is 400,000 or what.
You mean including Minneapolis, St. Paul?
Both St. Paul and Minneapolis combined, Columbus is larger.
Okay.
They have ward system where they have twice the size,
okay,
twice the size of the city council. They have about 13. We have 7 here. There has been an effort in Columbus, matter of fact, speaking of the law enforcement agencies, to actively recruit diversity, not only the Somalis, but also all new Americans, African Americans. Mm-hmm. There is a low participation in Columbus CBD, and they recognize that. As a matter of fact, in this July, they will be hosting a multiple events throughout the city where they will be actively recruiting people with different languages. But you got to also understand, if you were to be a Columbus police officer, you're not going to be a Somali officer. You will be serving the whole community.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes training, it takes mental and physical fitness to do the job. For those few individuals who, and I was very closely working with Columbus CBD to help them to recruit those individuals. But it takes time, it takes training, it takes capacity building. But we have a leadership and friendly public policy that makes the environment conducive to foster a better, healthy economy within new American communities. Matter of fact, our office, Columbus Department of Community Relations, then conducted in partnership with resettlement agencies a research, and I have a copy for you, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
It's called The Impact of Refugees in Central Ohio, and it shows a higher number of immigrants, including the Somalis, tend to create more businesses than any other community. But when it comes to the unions and political participations, that has to also come from the community. The community leadership organize themselves. The one good thing for the Somali community is we have a very high participation in voters. And you can ask the Franklin County Board of Elections. And the reason why is because when you become a citizenship, before you take the oath, there will be a form to register to vote. People keep that very dear to their heart, and they will always participate to vote. But as a relatively newcomer community, it will take time to be in the position where Minneapolis and St. Paul is right now.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking, comparing, contrasting the experiences of Somali communities in Columbus and the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. Questions or comments, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So, Stephanie Chambers, let's talk about that issue of the ward system. It certainly has been a very controversial issue here in Columbus. It's twice the size of the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, yet there are many fewer representatives on city council, and certainly they don't represent neighborhoods and that sort of a thing. To what extent is that something about what you were talking about?
Yes. So the electoral structure in Columbus is very different from what we see in Minneapolis and St. Paul. So in Columbus, you have this at-large system. So if you want to run for the school board, you want to run for city council, you have to run citywide. And in the political science research, that there's a clear indication that that type of a system depresses the ability of underrepresented groups to get elected. So that's a real challenge. And, you know, there's a possibility that that system could be challenged on the grounds that it limits opportunities for underrepresented communities like Somalis. I would also say that they have a single transferable vote system in the Twin Cities where you can rank candidates in the order that you choose. You know, these things are unlikely to change in Columbus. There'd have to be probably a major lawsuit, and I don't know that that holds much promise. What does hold some promise is that Somalis are residentially concentrated. I mean, on the negative side, it's segregated, right? But on if we look at it, political incorporation, we can think about the residential concentration in certain areas of the city. One of those areas is House District 25, and Jibril or Abdi can correct me if I'm wrong on that. But that's a district where Somalis are largely concentrated, and eventually they might be able to elect somebody to office for that House district, and we might see something similar to what we've seen with Ilhan Omar getting elected as the first Somali to a state legislature in Minnesota. And as Abdi Sofe said, you know, we see very high voter turnout among Somalis. Somalis take the right to vote very, very seriously. And I was getting estimates that were unverifiable, but, you know, 80 to 90% of eligible Somalis going out to vote. And I would also add that another sort of opportunity is the Democratic Party in Columbus. The Democratic Party could really capitalize on Somali voter turnout and court Somalis, but also look for Somalis who might become leaders within the party and might run for office. And we see that with the Democratic Farm Labor Party, which is really sort of a progressive wing of the Democratic Party, but that's what we see in the Twin Cities, is that the DFL has made a concerted effort to work with Somalis, to court Somalis. They feel that they're a really important part and an exciting part of their coalition. And I think we could see that in Columbus. There was, during one of my interviews with a Democratic representative, they said they were starting to think about this, but it really hadn't happened yet. So individual candidates who might be Democrats or even Republicans might go out and try to convince Somalis to vote for them as an individual, but the party itself isn't organizing this. And I think that's something that could happen and be a very positive thing. I think Somalis would be receptive to it, and I think the party would benefit from it as well.
Well, right, with the Jibril, with the high voter turnout that we've been talking about, there's obviously an interest in politics. Does that something that people talk about in the community that they'd like to be in office? They'd like to be running something.
Definitely, there is an interest in the community in voting. The right to vote is taken very seriously,
right,
as both Stephanie and Abdi said. And people are interested in having Somalis run for office, but there are some barriers to that, one of them being that there is no Somali office holder in Columbus, for example, who can serve as a role model.
Kind of a mentor type of a thing, yeah.
Yes. And elected officials here are protecting their turf. They don't want anybody to get into the system. So there are barriers to entry that Somalis face from having to run for office.
We have an email from Madi who writes, the other difference is Somalis in Minnesota are not concentrated in the major metropolitan areas. They are all over the state, including small towns and suburbs, which gives more economic opportunities and jobs prospects. The other difference is Somali professionals from other states moved to Minnesota after graduation to seek employment there. Now, I wanted to ask, you know, about what Jibril Muhammad said earlier, Abdi Sofe, and that is that a couple of people he knows applied to be police officers in Columbus, did not make the cut, went to the Twin Cities and did make the cut. What's the difference? I mean, I guess maybe, Stephanie, I should ask you, is there something about the police force that's different there and what they're looking for?
Well, I won't say that there's anything different in what they're looking for, except that they realize that having Somalis on the police force is a priority.
But do they lower standards or something?
No, they don't lower standards. I think that they've just made an effort to mentor people. But I will also add that there's the Somali American Police Association that was formed in Minneapolis after, I think it was six Somali officers got on the Minneapolis police force. They created this national organization. They've been focusing on supporting Somali officers across the country, recruiting young Somalis to enter the police force. And I can tell you a real big difference between what I found in Columbus and the Twin Cities was that in the Twin Cities, there was a positive attitude about law enforcement at the local level. Not. It wasn't like they said, oh, the law enforcement is perfect. They just said, it's you know, we see Somali officers. It's a great thing. I did an interview with a top-level administrator in the Minneapolis Police Department about this, and what he said to me was, I don't have the quote in front of me, but he said something like, they're like rock stars. They are viewed in the community as, you know, really important. They're role models for young kids in the community.
Do they actually serve in the community, though, or they serve at large in the police force, right?
Both. Okay. Well, yes, they serve in the police force at large. Some of them have chosen to work in the community where Somalis are concentrated, in the Cedar Riverside neighborhood of Minneapolis. So there actually is concentration in the Twin Cities, too, of Somalis. But I ended up doing a ride-along one night with a couple of these Somali officers, and it was amazing because what I saw being on the streets with them was how people interacted with them. And there was a level of trust. There was excitement when they came around. People were shaking their hands. Also, this was very moving to me. There was a young Somali woman who had been assaulted in another area of town, and her family drove her all the way across town to where these guys had their beat to report the crime. And these guys could have sent her back to where the crime had happened and said, report it over there, but they took her. We took her to the hospital. I mean, there was, and it was that level of trust that I got to see firsthand. At first, I thought, oh, this is, you know, this is nothing big. But then when I realized what was really going on, it reinforced that these guys were important. And I would add that having these police officers has helped other officers, non-Somalis, understand Somali culture. You know, they're colleagues with these guys. They can ask them questions, get rid of misconceptions, realize that they're all just police officers.
Mm-hmm. Abdi, Sofe, you know, from the city's point of view, what's the problem?
Well, we see an opportunity, matter of fact. We're very hopeful sooner we will have more representations within CBD. What we learned is from Minneapolis and other cities is when you have one individual serving the community, the Columbus Police Department, if you have only one, others will follow. You need a role model.
Right.
The Somali community youth is very civic-minded. What people don't know is when you come here as a refugee, those between the age of 18 to 21 must register with Selective Service, which means they are ready to defend this nation. So they follow politics, as Jibril said earlier, very closely. So that's that sense of appreciation. So and Columbus Police is working very hard to make sure that happens. As I said earlier, this July coming up, there will be a number of programs and invitations will be sent out where the application will be open, I think, for one whole month. So when you have one individual starting and having that uniform, for those who were in classmates with that individual, we want to do that. Well, if he can do it or if she can do it, I can do it too. That kind of attitude will be. And other cities and other jurisdictions within Ohio and Franklin County will follow suit. What I didn't mention earlier is we already, as a matter of fact, have one Franklin County deputy sheriff, one civilian and one in uniform, already serving. And the number of them are in the pipeline right now.
Doesn't the issue about the hijab send, the headscarf send a bad message, though, when it comes to recruiting?
Well, that's an issue of contention. Mm-hmm. Everybody agrees that. The former mayor, Michael B. Coleman, asked the leadership of CBD to look into it.
Right.
Because of the uniform policies and not serving any particular religion or ethnic group, the response was, this is not nothing against the Muslims, but this is, we're not a religious organization. And I think this is an ongoing conversation. We see what happens, but I'm not in a position to say anything about it. Hopefully, what we know is the fact that some other cities were able to accomplish that in Minneapolis, in London, in Toronto, Canada, and many other cities, matter of fact. But in Columbus, whatever works for the community, what we do understand is CBD serves the community, and whatever serves the community will be something that they will be receptive, hopefully.
We are talking, comparing and contrasting the Somali immigrant and refugee experience in Columbus with that of Minneapolis-St. Paul, a region roughly half in population, but twice as many Somali Americans live there than here. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Today we are comparing and contrasting the Somali refugee and immigration experience in Columbus and Minneapolis-St. Paul region of Minnesota. Still with us is author of the new book entitled Somalis in the Twin Cities and Columbus, Immigrant Incorporation in New Destinations. And she's also a professor of political science at Trinity College in Hartford, Connecticut, Stephanie Chambers. Also with us, New American Initiative Outreach Coordinator for the City of Columbus, Abdi Sofeh. And joining us by phone from the Minneapolis-St. Paul area is Executive Director of the Minnesota Chapter of the Council on American-Islamic Relations, Jelani Hussein. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Also, and I want to say thanks to Jabril Mohammed, Executive Director of the Somali CAN in Columbus and the Somali Language Professor at Ohio State University. Appreciate his participation today. We're talking about the differences. We were just talking about the differences in police forces in Columbus and the Twin Cities when it comes to relating with the Somali community. Jelani Hussein, what stands out for you when it comes to the police there?
Well, I think, as you mentioned, and with your earlier speakers, that Minneapolis and the Twin Cities areas now has a number of Somali police officers, not just male police officers, but also female police officers. This has been a big improvement in the relationships between police and law enforcement. And I actually serve right now on a new council, Commissioner's Council on Law Enforcement and Relations that was just enacted after several shootings of African-Americans, both in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and to continue that conversation. And so I think law enforcement is one of the identifiable ways of showing progress for an immigrant community. But I think it's really the leadership that has to make a priority, and that's what we've seen. I'll give you an example. I've had a couple of suburban police departments that have actually reached out to me as they were seeking out qualified candidates from this community, exactly Somali or Ethiopian. And so it has to be the police chief who says, I want to make sure if I can get him, or the state patrol. And so the leadership of the state is really partially responsible, as well as also the community and those who are advocating.
Okay, I want to get some calls in here. One from Omar in Columbus. You're on the air, Omar. Hi.
Hi, I am. Hi, everybody. I lived in Columbus about 10 years now, and I lived in the Twin City, and I still have relatives in the Twin City. One thing you will notice is it's just that the average education level is higher in the Twin City than in Columbus. We have a lot of newcomers in Columbus, like on the west side of Columbus, Wedgwood area. A lot of people who are maybe here in the country only a couple of years,
yeah,
and mostly have a lot less education than average people, average Somalis in Minneapolis. A lot of Somalis, well educated or some college degrees, move from out of state and move to Minneapolis the last 10 years.
Yeah.
And that's different. It's really not a lot. It's not a miracle. It's just that's all it is. We have a lot more newcomers in Central Ohio than the Twin Cities.
Yeah, Stephanie Chambers, it's a younger population, right? It's a younger in terms of its newness to the United States.
Yeah, there is a level of newness, and Omar is correct. And I think this is one of those areas where this points to an area where we could see some potential improvements, right? You could have scholarships that are targeting new Somalis or, you know, new Americans mm-hmm. who are coming to the U.S. And, you know, there are opportunities here to sort of take advantage of that situation and open doors for people who are struggling. And, you know, you've got some amazing institutions, of course, my alma mater, but other schools in the area that could really help with the education of Somalis. And I should mention there are a lot of Somalis who are at different colleges and universities in the area. Ohio State has a great, really active group of Somali students who are just wonderful people. And, you know, so it's an area that should be targeted, I think.
Do you have that sense as well, Jelani Hussein, in the Twin Cities, that it's a more mature population? It's now second generation in many cases, and they've just been around the block a few times.
Well, my family moved to Minnesota in 1993 when we had barely no Somalis here, and mm-hmm. Never thought that the state would be the center for this community. But the main reason has been jobs, and actually, contrary to what most beliefs are, most of our new arrivals actually live in greater Minnesota because the more lower-skilled turkey plants are not in the Twin Cities. They're actually in St. Cloud, the Wilmer, the southern parts of the state in Faribault and Owatonna. So a good mix of a population in the Twin Cities. But if you go to greater Minnesota, you'll actually find those individuals who have been here in the last 5, 6, 7 years more populated than those who for right. quite some time. But you're right. The statistics currently show that 40% of the Somali community are actually born here now. So the second generation population is quite growing.
An email from Chris, and by the way, Omar, thank you for your call. An email from Chris says, I was at a social gathering recently when a conversation about the Somali community in Columbus took an unexpected turn when a West African immigrant complained that people in Columbus talk as if Somalis are the only African immigrants here. She also expressed concern that the attention of public officials to the Somali community has resulted in limited attention to the presence and needs of other African immigrants. Can your guests comment on the presence of other African immigrant communities in Columbus, including how the Somali community gets along with or works with other African immigrants? Jelani Hussein, as executive director of Abdi Sofe, from the New American Initiative Outreach Coordinator, doesn't say Somali in that title. What about that issue? Are you being stretched thinner than people might realize?
No, that's a very good question. We have not only the Africans, but by the way, speaking of African diaspora, all 54 nations of African communities are represented in the city of Columbus. We have a little larger representation from West African and East African region. If I give you an example, the second largest African diaspora after the Somalis, I think, are from Ghana. Uh-huh. And then we have the Sierra Leoneans and Senegalese and the Ethiopians and Eritreans and so on and so forth. The list goes on until you have all 54 of them represented in Columbus. Columbus, as the center of nation, became a gateway, as I said earlier, because people who have transportations and logistics, and because everywhere you drive from Columbus to the west or to the east or to the south or to the north, it takes only 10 hours to reach almost 80% of the U.S.
So it's a good place to start.
It's a good place to start. And it's relatively, affordable housing because the rent is relatively low to compare with the major other cities. But with the city of Columbus, we work with all different ethnic groups to basically address the issues that affects their community. Engagement, education, to eliminate any prejudices. And there is no any particular group that gets any favoritism. But because of the newly refugee resettlement and resettlement organizations, Somalis, I don't see any special attention that the Somalis get. We work with the Latino community. There are a host of issues that affects them. One of the goals that we try to address is neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And the issue of neighborhoods is a priority for the mayor. You have, if you go to the northeast side or the west side, the previous caller mentioned on Wedgwood.
Yeah.
You have that neighborhood, Hilltop area, mm-hmm. and they have civic associations, they have area commissions, and you don't have a lot of participation from immigrants, whether they're from Somalia or Latino. So we make sure that the city employees in the area and the local stakeholders are aware of the fact that there are other neighbors, mm-hmm. so they can invite them to their civic association meetings. So they can be a part of the community. Issues that affects that community, whether it's a safety, whether it's health-related issue, whether it's code-related or code enforcement-related issue, so they can be a part of that conversation and can be a part of that community.
You know, Stephanie Chambers, something occurred to me while I was listening to Abdi Sofe talk and across the conversation, that is, does Columbus have a sense of being more of a pass-through community, whereas the Minneapolis-St. Paul more of a we want you to come here and stay community?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, I think Columbus. I think that there are also employment sectors that really need Somalis, like the warehouses in Columbus. I mean, that's one of the biggest employers. I think that there is a sense of, in a general sense, we want you to be here, and we need you. And I mean, you're playing an important, vital role in our local economy. I don't know if that answers your question, Anne.
I just wondered. I just wanted to clarify that and see if there was an important distinction there or not.
If I can chime
sure.
in,
I would
say that in Minnesota, majority of the reason why Somalis have actually come is because of their relatives.
Yeah.
And I think and to be able to find a job without too much hassle is part of that. And so I don't know if Minnesota actually does a good job of calling people and saying, hey, we want you and we want you to stay here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the struggle is is real for new immigrants in this country. But one thing that definitely makes it easy is if you can get a job, you can get a house, a place to stay, and a community that can support you. And so, there is an enclave of a community here. We have large entrepreneurial malls within the Twin Cities. And so these are part of the reason why people do come here. But I think I would say that, the state of Minnesota benefits from this new immigrant community. And Minnesota actually has a history of welcoming others, including the Hmong in the 60s,
mm-hmm.
The Hmong community. And that community actually kind of paved the way a little bit for both the East African community from the Somali, from Ethiopia, but also the other African communities that have made Minnesota home, including the Liberian community, which has a substantial population of diaspora Liberians in Minnesota.
Now, Jelani, we're just about out of time. I couldn't let the hour go without talking about this issue. Youth radicalization is a big issue, of course. It's in the news, probably, out of proportion with what the actual reality is. But be that as it may, Minnesota has seen more of it than Columbus. And I'm wondering about the factors there. Is this just a function of a larger population, ergo, or what? Can you talk about that a bit?
Well, I think, you have to realize that that in 2008, when we had young men join Al-Shabaab's community, this was a tremendous surprise to many of them. And it was a great deal of confusion, even politically, in Somalia, what was going on.
Uh-huh.
And that started that first wave, but the community immediately responded and had absolutely no one joining that organization. But through that process, it created a great deal of anxiety around the conversation of terrorism publicly, and that allowed for underground, internet-style, recruitment, which we saw in the ISIS cases. But again, I say that, this is a story that does not shape the narrative of this community, and
mm-hmm.
the community is actually much more resilient than this. And to be honest with you, the last case, there were a number of issues with it that were not really clarified, and we perhaps don't have the time to explain.
Yeah.
But I would say this community actually has stepped up, and there's a number of efforts to address this issue, and I think there we will see those results in the near future.
Well, I'd like to invite you back to talk about those again and talk more about comparing and contrasting Columbus and the Twin Cities. So thank you so much, Jelani Hussain, for now.
All right. Thank you very much.
And Stephanie Chambers, author of Somalis in the Twin Cities and Columbus, Immigrant Incorporation and New Destinations, thanks to you as well.
Thank you.
And Abdi Sofe, New American Initiative Outreach Coordinator for the City of Columbus, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Boy, this hour went fast. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.